The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by WinBet. I am your host, James Anderson. I've got a really fun episode this week. Jesse Roach and Brett Sayre from Baseball Prospectus, two of the best dynasty guys I know, playing leagues with both of them. They really know their stuff. And we are going to do a first-year player draft, hoping to go 10 rounds, but we'll see. We'll see how far we get with this. But first of all, thanks for joining me, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having us. Always fun to chat about players we won't see in the majors for years with you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for having us, James. We love your work and we greatly respect you. You know, same goes right back at you. You're one of the premier dynasty minds in the industry, and just pleasure to be on the show.
Yeah, I mean, with Brett, it's kind of gotten to the point where I just like don't really trade with him because I never like where things go with our talks, which is a compliment. And with Jesse, I mean, Jesse, how many points did you win the P365 XDL by this year? Like 30? I was battling for second place for a couple months, and I had no illusions of catching you. So, I mean, you guys are definitely two of the best out there. Before we like get into the actual draft, do you guys have any sort of biases or sort of tendencies when it comes to just a general first year player draft? Like, are there certain player types that you avoid or that you tend to gravitate towards? Is there anything like that? Or are you just analyzing each player individually and just kind of go from there?
Jesse, you want to start this one off?
Sure. Usually in first year player drafts, I do tend to go hitter. Heavy if possible, just because, you know, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. It equally applies to first year players, maybe more so than most, especially prep pitchers, because they're so unpredictable and their timelines are so their proximity is so far out that investing any type of pick value in a prep pitcher is incredibly risky, and the upside is not as high as maybe people like to think. But otherwise, yeah, I like to invest hitters. I think it really depends on the type of league. I think in a strict dynasty, I'm less concerned about proximity. I'm more concerned about upside. But in a lot of leagues where there are limited amount of keepers you can have, especially prospect keepers, I do tend to lean toward college bats if possible. Or occasionally I'll go pitcher. And when it does happen, it's almost always a college arm that has big upside.
Yeah, I think we all have our tendencies. I tend to fall in love with a lot of high school bats, and that's just where I end up. I think there's, you know, I like to go into one of two very divergent paths. Either the true pure upside guy, or give me the guy with give the really good hit tool and approach and see what else they can figure out around it. You know, kind of the middle ground is, you know, tend to be the players that I will not spend high picks on. But you know, that's not to say I won't take college bats because I will. I almost never take high school arms at the beginning of a draft, but once you get towards the end of a draft, I will definitely take high school arms, because honestly, the information that we have on these guys is just not anywhere near what we have on college arms or high school bats, or especially college bats. So, spending a first or second round pick on a high school prep pitcher, not a great idea. Spending, three picks in rounds 5 through 7 on 3 prep pitchers, probably not a bad idea. Other than that, I mean, like you guys know, I mean, I tend to get the guys that I want in my head, and I tend to go get them, and sometimes they work out.
Well, you will have the opportunity to get whoever you want, because Brett is making the first pick and Jesse will follow him, and then I'll be at the turn for 2, and we'll on and on we'll go. And so we're just going to be taking draftees, not going to be messing around with international guys yet. So Brett, you are on the clock for the very first pick in this first year player draft.
Sounds good. I'll feign excitement for this, just because I will preface this pick by saying that I think this is probably the worst year in 7 or 8 years to have the top pick in a first year player draft. It goes back at least 7 or 8 years. Actually, we've all been doing this a long time. It's not. Were you gonna say something, James?
Yeah, I just wanted to interject really quick, like on that point, like where are you guys slot, whoever the first guy is on your board, where do they like slot in your prospect rankings, just to kind of give people that type of context?
I don't think there's a top 30 prospect in this draft. There are, it's questionable as to how many top 50 guys there even are. There maybe 4 if you're confident in, and we'll get there, but there could be as many as 4, but honestly, there could be as few as 2, which is not good.
Yeah. I actually have 1 at 25. It's the highest I have anybody ranked from this class. Everyone else is after 30. Actually, everyone I believe is after 35. So yes, it's not the strongest top of the class. I think when Brett and I were initially looking into this class and putting together consensus rankings, Brett repeatedly opined about the quality of this class, and it was not kind. It was not kind. I had to sit through Brett, I guess I'm going to say whining about this class. You got a taste right there. It's not a strong class. And I think if you have a pick at the beginning of this class this year, beginning of the draft class this year, you may want to try and trade it if possible. Trade down or trade for a like-for-like prospect. I think that often high picks in first-year player drafts get overvalued because they have this nebulous value. It could be any player, and people get become in love with the idea of drafting a player. So if you could trade this pick for like a top 20 prospect, if you have like the first overall pick or a top 3 pick or something, I would jump at it. Brett, even in email, mentioned next year's draft class. And yeah, if you could trade this first round pick for a pick that's guaranteed to be a top 3 pick next year, do it. Cause next year's class is much, much stronger.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Brett, you're up.
So on that note, I'll take the player who I'm pretty sure Jesse considers to be the top 25 prospect there, and I'll take Jordan Lawler. I think the overall group of tools that he brings to the table, I think, is more attractive from a high school bat. Compared to the other guys who are there. I mean, I don't think he quite has the upside that that Khalil Watson has. And that's okay. I think he has a much better chance of being a strong fantasy contributor in mixed leagues. And it pains me to have to say that about the first overall pick, because I don't think Lawler is a superstar. I don't think he's an elite fantasy player. But I think you're hard pressed to find one in this class. So I'm going to take the guy who I think has the best chance of being really good.
All right. Well, I have the second pick in this mock, and actually Lawler was not going to be my first pick, and this is based on on-base percentage formats, and a player I think that actually has potentially more upside in OBP formats is Marcelo Meyer. So he was the fourth overall pick for the Red Sox. You know, he is basically a shortstop that is really just a hit tool driven profile. Doesn't have much speed, doesn't have the type of athleticism that's going to drive stolen bases likely at peak. But what he does have is a beautiful, picturesque left-handed swing. It generates tons of contact already. Seemingly easy pop, but you know, there's more in the tank and more power is likely to come. And I think taking him or ranking him high is banking on power that is going to potentially come, because he does have a projectable 6'3" frame. So there's a chance that he could develop, you know, 25 plus home run power at peak. You know, again, that's in a good world. That's a good outcome, very good outcome for Meyer. A lot of people have comped him to Corey Seager as a prospect. I think that's very fair. I know that's a very high bar to reach, but I think if you're going to lay out comps, you are often, you know, dreaming anyway. So something like a 290 average with 25 plus home runs, I think is a type of peak production you could potentially anticipate for Meyer. And I think he has a little less risk than a lot of other prospects like Lawler because of his hit tool. You know, his debut wasn't like loud. He hit like he had 275, 377, 440 in the Florida Complex League. And his whiff rate was 33.5%. So not great. But again, remember, he's really young. He also stole 7 bases in that brief debut. So, you know, maybe there's more speed. And again, you know, stolen bases you don't have to have raw speed to steal bases. Yeah, a lot of it's instinct driven. So maybe there's more speed upside for Meyer as he gets older. But again, stolen bases in the Complex League, you know, you could not count on those at all. But yes, Marcelo Meyer at second overall.
Brett, how does Meyer's hit and power upside compare to Lawler's for you?
I think it's a little bit higher. I think, you know, Jesse's right. I think the hit tool is a little bit better for Meyer than Lawler. I like the overall skill set. And honestly, I don't, you know, and this is where this is kind of a really fascinating tangent, is that I don't really give a whole lot of thought as to average versus on-base percentage when we're talking about players that are that young. I think you're too far away from really having that keen of a sense of what a player is. And obviously there's exceptions to everything, where there are some players that are really, you can really tell that they are going to be on base machines or are really going to be free swingers. But I think unless you're talking about the far edges of that, you know, I think there's not a, you know, it's a good tiebreaker, you know, and a good way to lean, but I don't think it's something that should be really driving people's decision making.
Are you concerned about Lawler's shoulder surgery?
No. I don't think concerned. You say that, but like we got into this argument. We were doing the dynasty rankings. Like I don't care about shoulder surgery for Corbin Carroll. Like I don't, we talk when players are that young, unless it's something that is a severe enough injury that could potentially be career altering. Even if it's slightly timeline altering, I'm not that concerned about it.
I think if an injury like this is to happen, it right now is the best time for it to happen to Lawler. I mean, if it's closer to debut, that would push his ETA out further. And right now, I don't think it really impacts his ETA a big deal, but I think it does impact if you're thinking about potentially trading him or flipping him. It does impact that, because I think he'll take longer to build value, perceived value within like the fantasy or dynasty community, because he may, you know, have a delayed start. He may start slowly, because often hitters do come back slowly from shoulder surgery. So that's something that I would consider too when you're evaluating Lawler's, you know, dynasty value. I know trade value is not something we really weigh in our dynasty rankings, but I know a lot of people do. So if you're thinking about trade value in terms of these prospects, I think you have to deem Lawler.
All right, I am up for 2 picks. You know, this is just a testament to how terrible this class is. I'm gonna take Henry Davis and Khalil Watson. You know, Davis is a catcher, which is just not something that I enjoy taking really in any kind of prospect draft, but I do believe he's the best college hitter in the class. You know, it's a really weak class for college hitters. You know, he's a catcher. That sucks. But I think he's going to hit for power. I think he's going to be able to stick at the position. You know, I think he'll be like hitting in the middle of that lineup when it's actually a decent young lineup in like 4 years, 3 years. And then with Watson, I think he's got the highest ceiling in the class. And I kind of think teams and dynasty players sometimes are still a little iffy on shorter players. There's kind of that lack of perceived, you know, looking the part. But I just think he's got just crazy bat speed, crazy raw power. He's as fast as any of the top guys, except for maybe Lawler. So, you know, I'm not thrilled about these picks at 3 and 4 of a first year player draft, but it is what it is. Any thoughts on those two picks?
I totally agree with you that Watson's got the highest upside in this draft class overall from a fantasy perspective. And for the reasons you mentioned, I think he's, you know, he's number three on my list. I think there's a lot to like about him. You know, Davis, it really is a testament to how crappy the college hitter class is. He probably is the best natural hitter in the college class, which is just really strange.
All right, Jesse, back to you.
Yeah, so this is the fifth pick in this class, and I'll be taking a pitcher. Dun, dun, dun. Jack Leiter. All right, so Jack Leiter was the second overall pick. You know, you would think that a dominant college arm from the SEC that pitched for Vanderbilt had 179 strikeouts and 110 innings with a 41.6% strikeout rate would be, you know, people would be like clamoring over him for in Dynasty. But, you know, there are concerns with Leiter. Before I get to those, though, I want to talk about what's really attractive. And that's his fastball. So his fastball is a big mid-90s fastball with extension and carry. It has a very good vertical approach angle. I mean, he's not the biggest guy, and that's one of the concerns. You know, he's only 6'1". He's not like a heavy 6'1". He's sort of a slight 6'1". And I think that's the concern is how many innings he'll actually be able to carry in the major leagues at peak. That's one of the big concerns. I'm not as concerned with that these days. You know, we've seen a lot of pitchers and sort of a transition in within major league thinking towards smaller arms in general, because teams are realizing that vertical approach angle is actually kind of important. And the best pitchers at vertical approach angle are shorter pitchers. And a lot of these arms that have really succeeded this year, Freddie Peralta, players like that, are smaller. They get huge extension and they have basically the modern analytical fastball. And that's exactly what Jack Leiter brings. He also has three secondaries. They're all perfectly fine. I mean, none of them really stand out. And that's the other concern. He needs to further develop these secondaries, curveball, slider, and changeup. You know, I think depending upon what types of reports you're looking at or when you even see Leiter any given day, any which one might be a little bit better than the others. And I think that all of them show promise. And, you know, given his background and, you know, it's not the best organization to land in with the Rangers, but I think that he's going to arrive quickly. I think he will get tons of strikeouts, which is what you want from your starting pitcher. And I think that he has a very high floor because I think he's going to be good. It's just about how good he will be. And of course, there's always risk because he's a pitcher and his arm could blow out any minute. But if I'm going to bet on a pitcher in this class, it's definitely Leiter, and I'm perfectly fine with him at this point in any first year player draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of around where he's going to go. Brett, you are at the wheel for two.
All right. Well, so I'm going to I'm gonna shoot for upside here. First guy I'm going to take is Brady House. I think there's a couple of things going on here. One, I think there's a little bit of prospect fatigue here. House was a big deal like a year and a half ago when this this class was, you know, the next class out to be drafted. You know, I think a lot of the reasons why people liked him then are still around now. I mean, he's got some of the most power in the draft class. he's got a solid bat. He went out, he was, had a near 1,000 OPS in the complex league. Wasn't very many at bats for what it's worth, but he went out and showed he could at least do some damage in some games. He was young on draft day, which is what you always want. I think he was 18, I think, a couple of days when he was drafted. And, he looks the type as bad of a metaphor as that is. So I will happily, given the other options that are around here, take my chances that he kind of regains that form and turns into a 260, 265 hitter with 30 or 35 homers. I think it's in the realm of possibility for him. The other guy, I'm just gonna throw my hands up in the air and be like, yeah, give me the power speed guy in Colorado. Give me Benny Montgomery. I have no idea what he's going to be, but he's got the tools to be whatever he wants to be. I think shy of Khalil Watson, he's got the highest fantasy upside among prep hitters, and, throw him in cores and that's even better. So it's fun to dream on. Might as well dream when the rest of the draft class looks like this.
And then you have to wait like until 2040. For when the Colorado actually like bring him up and play him.
Yeah. Well, for those two seasons that they call him up, he might do something.
So with both those guys, House and Montgomery, I think going into the draft, clearly, the hit tool was kind of the one knock maybe on both guys. Like if you were to be looking for reasons why it might not work out. And then they both made contact at like a decent clip at the complex level. Like, how much stock do you guys put into, a guy having a better strikeout rate than maybe you were anticipating? Cause like with Montgomery, I think there's a chance the hit tool could just be really poor. And he exceeded my expectations in complex ball, but I mean, the pitching there is terrible. Like, do you guys put much stock at all in that type of performance after a guy signs?
I'm going to say very, very little. There's not enough of a sample. The pitchers that they're facing, I really would not put almost any weight into that. Good to see. It's really good for is confirmation bias.
It's better. I mean, it's better than the alternative. I mean, if they went out there and just had a 40% K rate against complex pitchers, that would suck. But
that's true. But I don't think I would. I feel like if Brady House went out and had a 570 OPS with a 35% strikeout rate instead of.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What he did, I think I would still take him at the wheel here.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and I'm with you all. I don't think it's not something I put a lot of weight on, but I think it's something I will consider. If a player crashes and burns in their initial debut and shows something really alarming, I think we have to at least consider it. If someone like whiffing has a strikeout rate of 40% and a walk rate of like 5%, and it's in the complex league or in low A and they're a college bat, those are concerning things. And especially if those were prior concerns, if there was concern about the hit tool and it gets, again, confirmation bias. I do think it you're right, James. It also, you know, lessens my concern a little bit about some other players. You know, if they really come out and hit and really perform, even against complex league arms, you know, especially for college high school bats, if they're out there in the complex, because a lot of these high school bats, really the competition level, that's has been a big concern for many of them. And if they're coming out and killing it in complex, or if it's a college bat who was in from like a lesser conference and is kills it in like low A, yes, the competition level is not great, but they came from a place where the competition level was really bad. So seeing them perform does give me more confidence that maybe we were right, or maybe the industry's right about, you know, if they have an aggressive hit tool on them, for example. And I'm going to give an example right now, because it's going to be my next pick. Colton Kowser is my next pick. So Colton Kowser was the fifth overall pick for the Orioles. And, you know, it's just what typical Orioles stuff they do with these high picks. And that is draft a player for an underslot deal and spread money out because they are cheap. But, you know, Colton Kowser, and I think he is a great example of what this class, what the type of potential this class actually does bring. And, you know, we've said that this is a weak class, but there's also a lot of uncertainty with this class because of, well, COVID. You know, we didn't have a 2020 season for the most part for a lot of these players. Some players basically didn't play at all in 2020 because their season started late. We didn't have, you know, summer leagues for a lot of these players. You know, players like Colton Kowser, who could have improved their stock by, you know, tearing up the Cape, they didn't have that opportunity. He didn't have that opportunity to play in the Cape. You know, he didn't have the opportunity to, you know, build his track record, to have a huge breakout 2020, to then, you know, have a confirming 2021. So his limited track record, I think, is going to cause some players to fall in these dynasty drafts, in these first-year player drafts, that maybe have more upside than we think. I think there's going to be a lot of hidden value late in these drafts. And yes, we're not late in the draft yet, but I think Colton Kowser might be a tad underrated.
Jesse, keep going.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Kowser had a huge debut. Again, you know, small sample. He was in the complex league and in low A, but he just utterly dominated. And I'll just focus briefly on the low A performance, which was 124 at bats, but he hit 347, 476, 429 with just a 5.8% swinging strike rate. That kind of performance is very good confirmation that, you know, the hit tool, aggressive hit tool grades people were evaluators were giving Kowser might likely be correct, that this is a big hit tool driven prospect. There is hidden upside, I think power upside, because he has a projectable 6'3 frame. You know, he hit for a good power in college, but again, weaker conference. So, you know, I think that I want to, like Brett said earlier, I like taking chances. He likes taking chances on players with big hit tools and who may be able to figure out the power speed. And I think Kowser is exactly that type of player, and he's going to potentially hit in Camden Yards. There's hidden upside here. So yes, Colton Kowser at this pick.
All right. It'll be to me for two picks, but first, a quick message from our sponsors.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET. the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down on blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in six states: Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WynnBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. All right. This is, we talked about like biases at the beginning. My probably main one is that I when possible, I'm going to go after college hitters. I tend to chase upside on the international market. I never really put a ton of stock into to hit tool grades of prep guys before they sign. And obviously, like you guys, I'm not trying to use my early picks on pitchers if possible. So I'm going to take Matt McClain and Trey Sweeney. McClain, obviously, kind of hit tool speed up the middle guy, but I think the power is maybe a little underrated with him, especially now that he's got a chance to play at Great America. I think he could be like a leadoff hitter, maybe even a number two hitter, steal around 20 bases, something like that, hit for a decent enough average with double digit homers if everything works out. So in this class, I think that's pretty solid towards the back of the top 10. And then Trey Sweeney, I think he is one of the guys where I'd give him a bit of a bump in OBP versus batting average. I think he's going to be a high OBP, high slug guy if everything works out. I think it's a good fit for him as a lefty hitter with the Yankees. And I have no clue where he's going to end up defensively. You just hope that if the bat is as good as it can be, then it won't really matter and they'll find a spot for him. But, these are guys who are borderline top 100 prospects for me overall, and I'm already taking them at this point in the first year player draft. So not ideal.
No, not ideal. I think that the top of this class is obviously weak, and I think that the middle of the class is weak, but it will eventually get to a point where I think the class actually kind of normalizes and it's actually okay. But we're not there yet. All right, so for my next pick, it's another, for me, borderline top 100 guy. And it's all about speed, and that's Sal Frelick. Sal Frelick is most certainly a contact speed bat, a lefty, a smaller left-handed hitter. A lot of these players get a little bit underrated in these first-year player drafts. I mean, we've seen like Alec Thomas, Corbin Carroll, players like that who people did not anticipate developing much power because they're so small, truly develop legit power. I'm not at all saying that that's exactly what Frelick is, because his current approach and swing path is not geared toward power. It's a swing path that is designed to basically put the ball on the ground and beat out, get infield hits. There is a little bit of hidden power there. I think that, at peak, he maybe can get, depending upon how his development goes, maybe, be around 10 home runs, give or take. But it really is speed. And, I think there's legit 30 plus stolen base potential here. In his debut, he had 12 stolen bases across the complex league, low A and high A. He scuffled a bit in high A, but long season, I can give him a bit of a pass after obliterating low A. So it was really a tale of two A-ball performances there. But this is really a guy who's hopefully going to hit for a good average, provide a lot of speed and some hidden pop, and hopefully arrive soon. He gets to play for Milwaukee, so it's going to be a favorable home park, potential like table setting bat. And I just think that a player like Frelich, again, you know, underrated in always in these first year player drafts. And there is, you know, a high floor for players like him and of, you know, a higher ceiling than people often think.
Yeah, I think the Kauser and Frelick picks, I think to me, both those guys are a little similar just in that, you know, you feel good about the hit tool, and with Frelick, you feel good about the speed. Mm-hmm. And then it's just a matter of like how much power comes. Kauser obviously has the size. I'm worried a little about his swing plane, but obviously that can change. And I mean, he doesn't need to do too much to get to some power. And then with Frelick, I think you're spot on about, you know, projecting maybe 10 homers or something like that. Brett, your last pick was Benny Montgomery at 7. Did Jesse and I do any damage to your queue?
Yeah, I mean, McLean and Frelick were going to be the next two guys on my board. So yeah, I think I was kind of hoping, I knew Jesse wouldn't take McLean if he didn't go to you, but I thought you might let me get him. I think all the stuff you said about him is right. I think there's a lot of potential for him to do kind of what we see Jonathan India doing now, which is, you know, a good overall player. Nothing that's going to wow you when you look at him on a day-to-day basis, but someone who accumulates fantasy value. But you took him, so I'll move past that. I'm going to go and I feel like the guy at the end of the pants sketch on the state, although I'm very dating myself with that reference. I'm going to go against my own advice here. I'm going to take Jackson Jobe. I think that at this point, you know, the other bats around that are available are, you know, are all either, they all have their flaws. They all have their weak points. And Jobe's fastball slider combo is just really good. I think there's, you know, I think there's the potential for him to be, you know, to be a, you know, an SP1 eventually. And, you know, if the prep pitcher you're taking in the first 15 picks of the draft doesn't have that upside, you've made a horrible, horrible mistake. but I think he's got enough upside to warrant here. And then with my second pick, I'm going to go with my first dude, and I'm going to take Carson Williams. The first pick of the Rays. You know, he was a two-way player in high school, just extremely, extremely athletic, has a ton of upside everywhere, but the Rays drafted him as a shortstop. He's going to play shortstop, and he's got a lot of power. I think the approach will improve as they focus him on being an offensive player, and I think he's, I think his upside is really quite high. I think he could ultimately hit for batting average. I think he could hit, 25 to 30 homers. And they seem to know what they're doing down in Tampa. So not the worst place in the world for him to fall, even though, you know, home park ultimately won't help him too much.
I could have predicted the Carson Williams pick. That's one of Brett's guys for sure. All right. Well, as you know, right now we're getting into the area of the class where I think it's fair to say it's time to start gambling more on upside. I mean, we're often gambling with all these picks, but you know, right now there's so little we know about a lot of these players, and what we do know is, you know, I think that it can change pretty rapidly, and I think we're seeing that, you know, even just from these brief debuts, I think we can see some changes in perception about a lot of these players. And I'm going to pick a player who actually I don't rank as high as some of the other players on the board, just because I want to point, because I know that James is going to pick him basically. and I want to protect that. And I think that I want to point out the fact that we need to change perception quickly about some of these players. But I'm going to pick Jay Allen, who's an outfield prospect for the Reds. Allen, you know, he was the first-round compensatory pick, 30th overall, a guy who was a two-way player in high school, and it was, you know, like
three,
a lot of two-way...
Three-way player.
Three-way player, true. Like a lot of players who are focused on multiple sports, you know, there's a lot of hidden upside, a lot of upside here that maybe it hasn't been tapped because he hasn't fully focused on baseball. Williams is one of them, for what it's worth. But with Allen, you're talking about a player who has legit huge power and speed upside, and that his hit tool is maybe better than a lot of people thought. In his debut, again, complex league, but you know, he had a massive debut in the Arizona complex league, where he hit 328, 440, 557 with 14 stolen bases in 19 games. Again, you know, big speed. There is big power there, and the hit tool's a lot better than anticipated. He, again, very brief debut, small sample, but his whiff rate in that sample was just 18.8%, which is very strong for a prospect that had questions about how he'll handle more advanced pitching. And that type of hit tool, if his hit tool could even get to just average at peak, I think that this is a guy who has huge upside. And at this point in the draft, I'm willing to gamble on upside and to try and snipe James and protect my next pick.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think with, you know, when we were talking earlier about like Brady House, Benny Montgomery, you know, I think there's a certain players where you don't want to read too much into what they did at the complex level. But with a guy who has that strong of a showing like Allen did, you know, it could be a false positive, but it's a data point, and it's like, well, look, like if some of this was legit and you look at the tools, I mean, we could be talking about one of the better players from this class. I mean, I really like what the Reds did, getting McClain and then Allen. So yeah, I mean, you definitely sniped me there, Jesse. I'm going to take another prep hitter who had an extremely strong showing in the ACL that has kind of changed, you know, what I thought of him pre-draft, and that's James Triantos, infielder with the Cubs. Like Allen, he got over $2 million to sign outside of the first round, and you know, he had an awesome performance in a small sample, but you know, there's a chance for a plus hit tool with plus power here, and you know, who knows what position he ends up at on the infield. But you know, his performance was so strong after signing. I think you have to look at that and say there's big time four category upside. Maybe it's not legit, but there isn't a player left who I'm very confident in. So I'm just going to roll the dice with Triantos. And I think Allen and Triantos are kind of the two prep hitters from this class who improved their stock the most since the draft with their performances after signing. And so I think those are going to be some pretty trendy guys, you know, back into the first round, early second round, and first year player drafts. My second pick is going to be Connor Norby, who was a guy that I was extremely high on pre-draft. Just, you know, a hit tool. Like I have a soft spot for hit tool second baseman, and he kind of is that. But I think the power and speed is a little underrated with him. I've seen that he was clocked as at least a plus runner as an amateur. Not sure how that speed's going to age, but I also think there's double digit homer pop there. So I think there's five category juice, and you like the landing spot with the O's. So James Triantos with the Cubs and Connor Norby with the Orioles are going to be my picks at 15 and 16. Back to you, Jesse.
Yeah, I think that the Norby pick, I could have predicted that before this draft even began. I was certain that Norby would go to you. And I like it because I think that there is, you know, again, similar to Kowser, these players like Norby who were in weaker conferences and just utterly dominated those conferences, there may be hidden upside that we haven't really seen yet. And again, Orioles, it's a potentially nice future landing spot in Camden Yards and the AL East, but long time from there. So, you know, Brett recently took Jackson Jobe. I'm going to take a player who is not a prep pitcher, but is in an arguably similar risky demographic, and that's a prep catcher. Yep. Prep catchers are scary. The time the lead time you have to give a prep catcher before they actually give you fantasy value on your active roster is forever, because you know they have to obviously improve and adjust as hitters, but also the defensive bar catcher is so high that they have to, you know, and learn, they have to learn so much. I'm taking Harry Ford. I guess I didn't even say who I was taking. I'm taking Harry Ford. He was the 12th overall pick for Seattle Mariners. I'm again going a little bit off my rankings here. I mainly because I really think it's appropriate to take him at this point, and I also want to talk about him. he's a rare catcher that has incredible athleticism. You know, this is a plus runner with big raw power. The type of right now, it's, you know, it's average to above probably right now. I think it could potentially grow into plus power at peak as well. There is questions about how his hit tool will end up rounding out. And I think there is questions, you know, other obvious questions about, you know, look, this is a prep catcher. I mean, is he going to catch? Like, what's his role going to be? You know, they could move him off of catcher. But, you know, I think too often we are deeming prep catchers as an industry too much after years and years of disappointment. And, you know, maybe we're starting to come around to him again because, you know, we have Francisco Alvarez and Tyler Soderstrom who had huge years this year. But then we're going to, we often will forget that, look, they're also probably not arriving until maybe 2024. So, you know, just be wary and be prepared to be patient with players like Ford. But if he clicks and as he gets closer to the majors, there's just huge upside. I mean, this is a catcher who could be a 2020 player in the major leagues potentially. And, you know, that's just, you know, unheard of. And even the promise of Dalton Varsho, who is not even remotely as lauded as Ford as a, you know, definitely not as a prep, definitely not as a draftee out of college, you know, and definitely not even as a prospect at his peak. Even the promise of Dalton Varsho, he was a top, you know, 150 pick before the season. And I guarantee you that Varsho will probably be a top 150 guy, you know, speculative guy before next season too. So, or top 250. But yeah, I mean, Ford has massive upside. If it clicks, 2020 catcher, I mean, that is a rare commodity.
Brett, before you make your picks, what's your take on Harry Ford in terms of like where would you be eyeing him in a first year player draft? And just kind of like Jesse was sort of alluding to, I feel like since I've been ranking prospects, there are more good fantasy catching prospects than ever. I don't know if that kind of aligns with what you guys have noticed, but I don't know if that means I should change how I value catching prospects if there are more good ones than there have been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as kind of the person who was, I guess, driving the Tyler Soderstrom train last year, I think there's, you know, the thing that I always watch out for with prep catchers is, you know, it is multiple, you know, multiple paths to value. And what you want is, you know, what you get out of Ford is you get and what you get out of Soderstrom as well, the athleticism to play a position other than catcher, because that, if they really come out and hit like gangbusters in pro ball, then you have teams that will just pull these guys off the position and bring them to another. And then you have a Will Myers type scenario, and you have a really, really good prospect who's now a really good hitter at another position who's going to play every day. You know, the path to being a traditional catcher, as you both have noted, is long, but I think it's, you know, I think it's gotten a little bit shorter, and I think it's gotten a little bit shorter because the things that pro teams look at are being indoctrinated in these prep catchers at such a young age now. So you have less ground to make up, I think, from a framing standpoint. I think those things are so ingrained in the game now that they're worked on it at such a younger age that there's slightly, I say slightly because it's still a huge jump, but there's slightly less of a learning curve as a prep catcher now going into pro ball as I think there was 5 to 10 years ago. And that's purely that's purely anecdotal and opinion, but I think it's I think it's something that if we start to see more data points like what we've seen recently, I think it, you know, might be something we really need to consider when we go through and do these rankings. So I guess my picks now, I'm going to start by kind of reinforcing the fact that I don't like to abide by stereotypes. This is kind of I'm going to call it the Nick Madrigal corollary, even though this player is like literally the exact opposite of Nick Madrigal. Madrigal got dinged because he was small, and everybody knows why he was dinged. And I'm taking James Wood here, who is just a gigantic human being. He's 6'7". He's basically the closest thing we've had to Aaron Judge since Aaron Judge came around, just in terms of physical presence. He's got big power. He's not slow either. I mean, he stole, if memory serves, I think he stole double digits in the complex, which not a very important data point, but the more important data point is that the Padres think he can stick in center field for at least a while, which again, the ways that his story ties in with Aaron Judge's story is really fascinating, and not that he should be comped to Aaron Judge just because he, it's kind of an easy physical comp. But it's the kind of thing where I'm not going to be the kind of person who's afraid to take someone who doesn't look like they should be the kind of player that they are, if I think they can put up the numbers. And, Wood's got just absolute thunder in his bat, and he had a very strong pro debut in the complex league. He certainly showed that. He's going to be one of these players that I am most fascinated to watch in 2022, because he could go in so many different directions. But if he comes out and shows the power, and strikeouts are always going to be a thing with him. He's a big guy with a big strike zone. If he can work to make everything happen around what will ultimately be a relatively high strikeout rate, I think we could be talking about a potential top 50 prospect at the end of next year. So that's my first pick. The other guy is, more boring, but I'm going to take Colson Montgomery, the White Sox. I think a lot of the, Jesse and I have talked about this, a lot of the things that people like about Montgomery are similar to things that people like about Mayer. And he's got the right approach at the plate. He looks like he's a hitter. He's old for the draft class, but people said that about Bobby Witt, and those people should be forced not to say that about anyone else again. I think there's a reasonable chance he could become a solid fantasy producer, and he's good enough that I don't want to take another arm.
Yeah, that was a very, very real snipe right there for me. I was hoping I'd get Colson Montgomery with my last pick, with this pick, but oh well. I think one thing that's sort of interesting about Montgomery, he's a 6'4 shortstop. I mean, it's unclear whether he'll actually stick it short, I think, but there have, again, you mentioned Meyer. I think, there's been comps between Montgomery and Seager as well. And in his debut, again, complex league, his whiff rate was just 14.6% over 111 plate appearances. That's pretty impressive. Even though, again, the sample's not big, the competition level's not huge, great, but that's one of the lower, I'd have to look at the leaderboard, but I think that's one of the lower whiff rates at that level. That's just been, that his ability to make contact, if he can get to his power, I think that, he has huge upside. I mean, there is legit outside shot at, potential six hit, six power, I think. But, I think that I'm a little upset, peeved that Brett took him, but all same, I'm going to go pitcher again. So there's a few college arms in this draft that were taken high. And, I think that this next one has a boatload of risk. and it's an Angels arm, Sam Bachman, ninth pick in the draft. Yeah. So the problem with Bachman, all right, I guess I'll talk about the positives, of course. Bachman has a massive fastball slider combo, mid to upper 90s fastball, swing and miss power slider. His changeup's actually somewhat serviceable too. I think it has a little upside, you know, with professional development. I think it could become a legit third pitch, but he already is coming in with those two bankable pitches. I think there is a massive amount of reliever risk, more than most college arms that have had dominant college performances. And, you know, he also impressed briefly in his debut. He was directly signed to High A, one of the few few college arms that actually had like a debut, 14 and a third innings in High A. You know, he has a somewhat violent delivery, a short arm action. I think it's gonna definitely potentially put him in a relief bucket. But you know, if he's able to stick in the rotation, and I think there's a shot he can, he has huge strikeout upside. I think that I'm not sure that his rate stats are going to be super sexy, but you know, around a sub four ERA, a decent whip, but you're coming for the strikeouts, because I think the fastball slider combo is going to miss a ton of bats. And absolute worst case scenario, I think, absent injury, is that he moves to the pen and he can move really fast in a relief role and potentially be a dominant closer. And early career, he could be something like what we've seen the White Sox do with like Michael Kopech, right? That's something we could see with Bachman. I think they're, you know, if I'm going to be taking a college arm at this point, I'm going to be chasing upside. And I think that Bachman has as much upside as any college arm in this class.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it really wouldn't be the absolute worst thing if he ends up in the pen. I mean, I think I have kind of lightly comped him to Craig Kimbrell, just because of the delivery and the two pitches, but it seems like the Angels every year are just basically taking whichever player they think they can get to the big leagues ASAP. And that seems to be how they're handling Bachman so far. We're going to have a little bit of a college pitcher run here, because I'm going to take Gavin Williams with Cleveland and Will Bednar with the Giants. Very different pitchers. Williams is kind of more obvious upside with the big fastball, big breaking ball. He's kind of like not a traditional Cleveland pitching prospect. But I mean, they know how to develop pitchers. The Giants, I think, really know how to develop pretty much everyone at this point, but I have confidence in them getting the most out of Bednar. He's kind of more of a pitchability guy, maybe more of a mid-rotation guy, but I think that's going to be a pretty nice team context. I mean, you can get a lot of value out of a number three starter with the Giants right now. So, you know, if I hit on one of those two, I'll be happy. Certainly both are still risky, even as college arms, but this is the point in the draft where I was willing to take my first pitcher.
All right, well, back to me. I am going to go from pitcher to really risky prep bat and Joshua Baez. Joshua Baez is an outfield prospect for the Cardinals. He was a second-round pick, 54th overall. You know, like James Wood, Baez has just gargantuan raw power, like just massive, massive raw power. He doesn't quite have the present speed as Wood does, but he does have some athleticism. He has a huge arm. I think he's a very safe right field profile. The big question with Baez, and it's been following him even, you know, prior to the draft and even more so now after his brief debut, is how good his hit tool will be. In his debut, he really struggled in the complex league. Hit 158, 305, 303. And, you know, he had two homers, five stolen bases over 23 games, you know, flashing a little power speed. But, you know, the pit tool really was a bit problematic for him, 35% whiff rate. But, you know, the Cardinals have actually done a decent job of developing that's like Baez. You know, we saw Nolan Gorman with a lot of hit tool concerns coming out of draft. He's actually on the cusp of the majors. And now I think a lot of those hit tool concerns, while they're still somewhat there, they've fallen away in a big way. And I think if they can get Baez to the point where maybe he can be a 250 hitter, I mean, he could be a 35 home run hitter. I think if he gets that power, and as he further develops, 6'4 guy, athletic 6'4, you know, frame, he has huge upside if it clicks. But I mean, very well may not click. And if it doesn't click, he might just like strike out, you know, 30% more at every level.
Yeah, I mean, I think Baez was the guy that I was actually kind of deciding between there. Maybe I should have taken him to prevent you from getting him. But I do think he's going to be a really nice value in first year player drafts because of that sort of shaky debut. Like anyone who was low on him before the draft will look at that and be like, yeah, he's not going to hit. But I think he can get there. And I do agree with you. I mean, I think the Cardinals have shown that they can do a pretty good job with prep hitters with hit tool concerns. So I think that's a nice landing spot. All right.
I guess that means, well, I would have liked to have taken Baez as well, but such as
I'm breaking hearts over here. I like it.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with, I'm not going to shy away from risk again here. I'm going to take Gunnar Hoglund first. You know, obviously he had Tommy John, and, you know, I think we're all at the point now, or at least we should be, where, you know, Tommy John recovery is not a sure bet, or certainly should not be thought of as a sure bet. But he was extremely good in his college career. And, you know, I think if I'm going to gamble on a guy coming back from Tommy John, give me a guy who I think had a good command profile to start. And Hoglund did. He certainly missed plenty of at Ole Miss. So, you know, kind of take him and fingers crossed that everything comes back the way it should. And if he's at full strength, I think he is on par with basically any of the college arms in this class, save Jack Leiter. And then the other guy I'm going to go with, I'm going to take Bubba Chandler. I have no idea what he is at this point, other than he is an extreme athlete and some sort of baseball player. And that's good enough for me. So he might be a pitcher. He might be an offensive. It doesn't matter. He's at some point, you know, James, I know you share my affinity for Mason Winn, even though, you know, he's exactly the kind of player who's kind of hard to peg from a fantasy value standpoint. But guys who are that athletic and, you know, show at least a pretty good early acumen for the game, I will take my chances that they'll end up giving value somewhere.
So what do you, when you're taking a guy like that, like, cause for me with Mason Winn, like I was extremely interested if he was sent out as a position player, less so as a pitcher. Is that like something you think about with like Bubba Chandler? Are you sort of like hoping that he'll be developed one way or the other, or you just kind of like, look, this guy's really talented?
Honestly, no. I think he might have more fantasy upside as a pitcher, which is really odd to say because it's almost never the case. And I agree with you, it's not the case with Winn. I think Winn as a full-time offensive player is a better bet. But even with that athleticism, I think I think Chandler could be a potentially special pitcher. But he could also be a very solid fantasy contributor on offense. So, you know, until we know more, just, you know, stash him and hope he turns into something.
All right, Jesse, back to you.
All right. Well, I am all about taking players with terrible debuts right now. I'm about to take another Tyler Black. Tyler Black is a second base prospect for the Brewers. Already strictly second base. He was the 33rd overall pick. He had another small school guy. He had a huge, huge year with Wright State. He hit 383, 496, 683. and in his debut, he crashed and burned, mostly in low A. Milwaukee player, so, you know, it's unfortunate because a lot of their other bats that they selected really did dominate in low A. I mean, Sal Frelick, another player that I'm not going to name yet because he may be picked soon or eventually in this draft, also dominated in low A for the Brewers, and Black fell on his face. He hit 222, 388 on base percentage, 272 slug. Part of this is an idea that that I think Black will be an asset in OBP versus average leagues. Yes, it's a very small sample, but he did have a 19.4% walk rate in low A. And this is after, you know, years of showing a very good eye at Wright State, again, in the Horizon League. So, I mean, it's hard to say how legit his performance was. But I think that there is a little bit of pop here. I think that he could develop something close to average power at peak. And I think that the hit tool, while he did struggle in his debut, I think that hit tool is going to be solid and, you know, hopefully above average, maybe plus, although I'm very skeptical right now of that, following that debut. You know, again, small sample, and we shouldn't overreact to these types of debuts, but I think he's going to be a guy who's going to fall in all first-year player drafts. But, you know, I think that he could be sneaky decent. I think that there have been comps to, like, Neil Walker. Todd Walker. I'm confusing all these Walkers. And Todd Walker was a very fine fantasy asset for many years. You know, someone who could hit, you know, 270 with 20 home runs, give or take, at second base, which is a weak fantasy position, and maybe get a boost in OBP formats. I mean, I'll take the gamble on it.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, again, I wanted Baez to be here. I think in a lot of first-year player drafts, you could get Joshua Baez here at pick 27. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to settle for two more pitchers, to close out my draft. I'm going to take Kai Bush, a big lefty with the Angels. He doesn't have, you know, the pitch mix isn't quite the same, but he reminds me just from a size and delivery standpoint to Trevor Rogers a little bit. You know, with him, it's more about the breaking ball than the changeup, but, I think Kai Bush was a nice get for the Angels in the middle of the second round. And then, I was not high on Ryan Cusick heading into the draft. I saw a lot of reliever risk there, and I still do, but it's really hard to overlook the fact that he had a 50% strikeout rate at low A, albeit in a tiny sample, but I mean, that type of strikeout rate is certainly worth paying attention to. I mean, I still see a lot of reliever risk there. But, you know, that's he's certainly a guy who's helped himself since signing. And I'm not excited about either of those picks, but this is where we're at.
Yeah, this is where we are at in this draft class. And I feel like I'm wedded to picking the player that I alluded to earlier.
You really don't have to, Jesse.
I'm going to do it. It maybe I'll be sniping someone in the process, but I'll take another Brewer. I am loading up on Brewers. I have three of them. Alex Benelis, he is a third base prospect from Milwaukee. I guess he first base too. He could end up there. Absolutely obliterated low A in his debut. He had 314, 379, 636 with 9 home runs across 132 plate appearances. That's a WRC plus of 163. Now, while those service stats are fantastic, and, you know, there is real legit power in this bat, you know, there's plus raw in my mind. There is swing and miss here. You know, his swing strike rate in low A, small sample, but 17% is not good. That is not a good swing strike rate. I think that, you know, we saw him really struggle at times in college. He had a massive freshman year for Louisville that really put him on the map and made him a potential, like, top five pick for this draft class. And then he was injured in 2020. So even the shortened season, he basically just didn't play. And then his stock was already in decline at that point. And then 2021 happened, and he really struggled at times. He only hit 256 for Louisville, had 51 strikeouts, lots of swing and miss. He did still hit 19 home runs with, you know, the power is very real. Like, this guy's a big dude. He can really drive the ball. I think there is certainly some small sample, and, you know, there are concerns, you know, look, low A, polished college bats in low A should perform. And so we should take his performance with a big grain of salt. But, you know, if the swing and miss, if he ends up being something akin to like a three, well, if he ends up being, you know, a 250 hitter, but he gets that power and it happens soon and he ends up in Milwaukee in a very favorable hitting environment, I mean, that's going to still be a very valuable player, even if he strikes out a ton. You know, I think he could be something like what we see with like Bobby Dalback. That's the type of player I see with Benales, who, you know, again, like Dalback, first base, third base type. Again, risky. But at this point in draft, like James said, there's not a lot of great options, and I'm willing to take a risk on someone with that type of upside.
Yeah, so much for me taking Benales with the last pick of the draft. I agree with everything you said on him. He's I know he had a detour in Louisville, but he's a Wisconsin boy who's come back home. So he's the one thing I will add is that the Brewers tend to do a very good job of analyzing college data. And, you know, this goes for both Benales and for Black, really. That, you know, when the Brewers take a college bat, you know, more than a lot of other organizations, that, you know, gives me a little pause. And Benales was, you know, was a really big deal a year and a half ago when it looked like this class wasn't going to suck. So for my last pick, I'm going to take Peyton Stovall. I will in 2 years, though. 3 years. Yeah. Whenever he's available, I will take
him. Do you have Stovall and Devil's Rejects, Brett?
I still do, yeah.
Okay. You can ride that through.
I don't know if I will, I do still have him on my roster. I'm going to take Max Muncy. You know, there's not a whole lot of deficiency in Muncy's game. There's also not a whole lot of excitement, but, you know, for me, he's the kind of player who, you know, when you kind of put him through the player development machine, give him a whole bunch of at bats against pro pitching, I think there's a pretty good chance that he could end up being a half decent fantasy contributor somewhere. And that's really all you can hope for with the 30th pick in a very below average draft class. The name, if you somehow roster Major League Max Muncy and Minor League Max Muncy on the same dynasty team, the fantasy team name options are kind of endless for you.
All right. Well, this was excellent. I'm going to go through quickly and just list everyone's roster one more time. Brett had the first pick, started things off with Jordan Lawler, and then he got Brady House, Benny Montgomery, Jackson Jobe, Carson Williams, James Wood, Colson Montgomery, Gunnar Hoglund, Bubba Chandler, and Max Muncy. Jesse was picking second, and he has Marcelo Mayer, Jack Leiter, Colton Cowser, Sal Frelick, Jay Allen, Harry Ford, Sam Bachman, Joshua Baez, Tyler Black, and Alex Benales. And then I had the third pick, and I ended up with Henry Davis, Khalil Watson, Matt McClain, Trey Sweeney, James Triantos, Connor Norby, Gavin Williams, Will Bednar, Kai Bush, and Ryan Cusick. How do you guys think this went? Did it just kind of reinforce how terrible this class is?
I think it did. I think it also kind of reinforced to me how, you know, I guess I have a little bit more of a type than I even thought going into it. I think that's the way I took one college player out of 10. That sounds about right.
Jeez. Come on, man. That's craziness.
What is it? When you join a dynasty league, you plan to stay in it for a while, right? I mean, that's why we do this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, dynasty leagues also fold, so you have to be aware of that. But yeah, I think this has definitely changed. I think going through mock drafts in general, regardless of format, you know, if you're looking at first year player drafts or doing like a dynasty mock or just a redraft mock or whatever, I think they're important because they really help, if especially if you're looking at ranking or evaluating players, I think they help put players into a more keen perspective. So you're looking at players, you know, I think that just doing this in general has maybe tweaked my rankings. I think that I've gone through and been like, well, if I'm going to be drafting X player over Y player, I shouldn't have Y player over X player in my rankings, regardless of what Brett says. But I think that mocks are important for that purpose. And this has certainly been educational for me. And I thank you for including us, James.
Where does Brett tell you the lowest Nick Madrigal can be ranked on the MSB rankings? What's the cutoff line there?
I'm pretty sure preseason Brett was trying to advocate for Madrigal as a top 5 prospect.
top 10 overall dynasty asset.
Yeah, I think Brett is definitely has a soft spot for Madrigal for sure, and I think that we will see some retribution for the Madrigal truthers out there, hopefully, once he returns from his injury. But, you know, it's an interesting profile, super unique, and it's definitely divisive. I think that a lot of people are just going to be out, and a lot of people will be sneakily in. And I think the price at this point is probably very low. So not a bad time to buy.
I agree.
Well, you already have him everywhere, so you can't buy. What do you guys got going on over at Baseball Prospectus that people should be looking for, and what do you guys have kind of coming up this offseason?
Yeah, well, we recently put out the top 500 dynasty rankings and the top 500 OBP dynasty rankings, so both average and OBP rankings. Right now, I've fallen down the, I guess, research rabbit hole, and I'm like diving into a lot of like research that's not really fantasy related. So today I put out an article on Called Strikes and propose an alternative rate, adjusted called strikes, that looks at called strikes as divided by total pitches minus swing. So called strikes divided by non-swing events, because there's a lot of noise and it's just a straight up called strike ratio. And also just looking at, you know, how to weight put different called strikes, because a called strike in a 3-0 count where most of the time batters are taking, and it's actually the most common pitch outcome pitch result, is not worth the same, not remotely close to being worth the same as a called strike in an 0-2 count where batters are almost certainly swinging or protecting, which is the called strike, for example, called strike in an 0-2 count 3.9% of the time. There's a called strike in an 0-2 count. In a 3-0 count, 55% of the time. So, you know, but call strike rate typically just weighs them the same. So, you know, that's sort of what I was looking at, what I've been looking at. And I'm going to be looking into more correlations and seeing what types of stats we should try and focus on to try and predict future performance. And I mean, this is going to be relevant for dynasty owners for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely an article you should check out. It's you know, we got a lot of good stuff going on at BP. We've got the usual postseason coverage and all that, and then we start prepping and cramming for January through March. So that's that in the book. We got we have a big book to produce. So a lot of that happens in the fall. So but yeah. Lots of exciting stuff. We're always a pleasure to come on with you over at the RotoWire podcast. You do an awesome job. We have these conversations when they're not being recorded, so it's fun to have them when they're recorded.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys are two of the best out there. I really respect everything you guys do. And I definitely would strongly recommend anyone who is listening to this, who's not a Baseball Prospectus subscriber, should remedy that ASAP, because there's going to be a lot of good work over there this offseason. Brett Sayre, Jesse Roach, thanks so much for joining me. We are brought to you by WinBet, and I will be back next week. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Okay.